kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I'm your host, Joe. We have another reviews episode lined up for you, and we're going to start things off the way these usually start off. Pernell Vaughn, how are you doing?
I'm having a good day, albeit kind of a funny one. How are you, sir?
Oh, I'm alive and kicking, which is, I guess, progress.
It is progress, man. It really is. Though, I think the thing that I'm laughing at the present, I'm not sure how it's going to take in general, but I still find it funny. I've become a huge fan of shit posting groups. Big fan. Now, I am more so a fan of them because I'm just a meme chaser. And a lot of times the best memes come from shit posting groups. Unfortunately, you also get some of humanity's shittiest people in shit posting groups. It's just kind of how it goes. Not saying everybody, because hell, I'm in one. I'm in three, actually. But by that same token, I'm just because some doesn't mean all. But the thing that I'm currently laughing at is, as you probably know, the big anger talk this week, if it's not political, is about the upcoming Captain Marvel movie. Now, the movie isn't even out yet. No one has seen it except for, like, press screenings and the like. And, of course, even with that in mind, everyone's got their own opinions on it. But this one group, the Always Sunny in Philadelphia group, had a meme that went up about Captain Marvel. And someone said, literally, and I quote, "It's just BS, just bullshit how this movie is forcing feminism upon me." Forcing it. I laughed. I can't. I've been stuck on that statement for like 10 minutes because I just picture a guy with a bat just like whacking this guy. And he like spray painted the word female empowerment all over the bat. Just spray painted the bat. He's like beating him with it. Like, I get it. Women can do shit too. I get it. Stop hitting me. Like, you don't understand, motherfucker. You gotta get this through your head. Women can be heroes or some shit, right? it's just the thought of it. Like, I'm sitting here, all these people are getting angry. My only thought is, I like Marvel movies. I've liked damn near everyone they've done so far. Even the shitty ones, like freaking Dark World. And I'm going to see this one too, mostly because I want to learn more about this lady aside from the fact that Rogue stole her powers on the 90s X-Men cartoon. That's it. That is it. Like, forcing feminism. I'm done. Like, I mean, I don't know. Somebody might be like, oh, what the hell are you talking about, man? It's because of the ideology, da 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 da. And my takeaway from that is, like, I've seen Schindler's List. And that movie didn't force genocide on me. It didn't force genocide. I've seen a lot of films that had themes or whatnot in them, and I never felt like any of it was forced upon me. I watch Always Sunny. I don't walk away and go, I feel like a shittier person now. They force shittiness on me. What the fuck? I came into this show feeling positive, like I helped somebody today, and now I walked away wanting to scam somebody. What did they do to me? but that's pretty much where I'm at. Just the thought of someone saying it was forced upon them. Like, well, this is where we're at right now. But thankfully, there's also video games and just laughing at crazy shit. That's me in a nutshell.
And there's a lot of crazy shit in games lately, too.
Oh man, I believe it. Wait a minute, give me something. Like, I'm sitting here thinking, like, oh yeah, freaking. Well, oh no, you. I think if I said something, I think you'll. I got a feeling I'll know exactly what you suggest. But where's the craziest thing that's going on in gaming to you right now?
All the rumors with Microsoft.
Wow, that was not what I thought you were going to say at all. But you're talking about them doing the Nintendo stuff.
Yeah, those rumors have just been blowing up, and it's such a crazy thought of something like that happening.
But it'd be ingenious, though. I mean, though I am surprised in a sense, because the original reason why I thought the rumor was prevailing is because there was also the side rumor that they were looking to get out of hardware. But I thought there was already talks of the next Xbox being in development. Mm-hmm. So that can't be the case. So the only thing that's left to me is they want their hand in more than one pot, which to me is pretty smart. Because imagine if it was on the Switch right now. Imagine if the Switch Online was being run by Microsoft right now. All the people out there going, oh, Switch is kicking the shit out of Microsoft. Microsoft's like, I don't give a crap. I'm getting their money too. What does it matter to me who's doing what? I'm getting paid. Shit, put it on PlayStation 2. I'll take all your money. Like, that to me is ingenious. It's like, hey, we have our primary pot here, but we also know that one of our best assets is our network infrastructure and the way we set up live just to work in general. You want a piece of that pie? We want a cut of the profits, and we'll gladly give it to you. But will it happen? We'll see. But I personally would love to see that happen.
Would love to see that. Pretty crazy.
Oh yeah, it would definitely be a nice shakeup in the industry because people are rumoring it. But let's be honest, no one's really expecting it. It's just rumors.
So do you remember back in like the Atari and ColecoVision days when they would sell adapters to play the competitors' games on your console?
I do not remember that.
My dad used to have an Atari 2600 and there was an expansion port on the front of it, and they sold a little dock that would plug into it that you could play ColecoVision games on there.
Now that is smart business.
Yeah.
And honestly, if you think about it, that's kind of how, obviously it can't now because everything, I feel like everything is a lot more complicated than those days, but it makes the most sense in its own right. It's like you go to the store, you buy a machine, and that machine can play games on it, right? But ultimately the machine is just a way to get the games into your house. And you just want to be able to play those things. So if someone said, hey, I know you have an Xbox and you want to play this other stuff, but you don't want to go out and buy, $400 or $500 consoles. I'm getting weird with the numbers, but just ride with it. You don't want to spend that much on all these systems. But if you want to just have one system and an adapter running, we do sell a weaker thing for X amount of dollars. Now, it doesn't let you go to, like, say, let's say, for example, PlayStation on the Xbox. It doesn't let you go on PSN for, like, some of the stuff we offer. But if you just want to play the games themselves, this is enough to play the games themselves. So you don't have to actually, like go out and buy a brand new machine. It's just enough to get the games running. To me, I think that would be genius.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want the full Monty, you go out and buy the full machine. But if you just want to pop a disc in and run a game, no muss, no fuss, that'd be smart if it could be done.
Yeah, it'd be cool.
It would. It'd be such a, everyone was wearing like a shiny world where everybody's hopping along, holding hands, drinking soda, orange vanilla, which I still can't find it. But anyway.
It's okay, Purnell. I believe in you. You'll find it eventually.
Just as it's getting discontinued, it'll be the last case at the grocery store. I get to hold it, buy it, and never refill. It's like, there it is. That was great, man. Whatever. I just want to taste it. I never found the Peeps cereal either.
No.
Never found the Peeps coffee creamer. Never found the Peeps cereal. And I really want those. Meanwhile, chocolate, crunch berries is all the rage. Though, Millie, I haven't seen those since I bought the first box either. So I missed that too.
Chocolate crunch berries?
And they're freaking amazing. That is what crunch berries should have always been. It's chocolate Captain Crunch with crunch berries in it.
Damn.
It's just good. It is freaking good. General Mills is losing his ever-loving mind right now in the cereal game. There's Honey Nut Frosted Flakes.
Dude, those are so good.
But they don't make sense. The Honey Nut was always the bees game. You don't just infringe. There's no, I guess I'll take it back. I guess there is Frosted Cheerios, but still, I always assume that the bee
Cheerios ripped off Frosted Flakes first, man. Payback.
No, I assumed he paid the tiger a penance to bone, the muscling on his turf. Like, here's a cut, man. You want to frost those O's? You're going to pay the man for it. And he's like, all right, gotcha. Don't want no business of trouble. And that was it. It worked. And then now all of a sudden, they're just crossing too many I's and dotting too many T's. It's getting ridiculous over here. I can't even tell my damn cereals apart anymore. There's Frosted Flakes and Lucky Charms. What is that?
Yeah, that's a weird one.
It's a very weird one. It doesn't make sense. Like, they had that one for Gay Pride where it was like everything in the box, and that was awesome because of the fact that it was just like, we just gave you everything that came off of the conveyor belt that fell into the vat and boxed it. You can eat this. And I'm like, yes, I want to eat that. I want to eat
it. Swept the floor and just poured it in boxes.
And I'm like, eat that shit. I'm in. And then, you know, once
Frosted
that was
Flakes and Raisin Bran and nails
and shrapnel. Like, what is this? Who thought this up, and why do I want it? I really want this. And then after that, I was like, okay, the novelty's worn off. Let's get back to the normal cereals. Oh, no. No, we've had a taste now. We can't go back. We got to Frosted Flake those Lucky Charms. We got to Rice Krispie those Fruity Pebbles. Like, what? Why? Who? I don't even know. Breakfast has lost its ever-loving mind. And that's that. It really has. My taste buds are so damn confused as a result. Waiting for like actual sausage to show up in my freaking Frosted Mini Wheats.
Jesus.
Pork flavored Frosted Mini Wheats. Eat up.
Pork flavor.
It's gonna happen. It's coming. It's totally coming.
Oh my God. You are in a groove, Purnell. You are in an absolute groove right now.
That's right. Shake, shake, shake.
Speaking of being back in a groove.
Oh, dear God, you bastard. But that was very smart. That was a well-done move. Speaking of being back in the groove, we're talking about Cool the Gang. Oh, shit.
Hell yeah, man. No, we should probably get to the games that we're here to talk about, huh?
We probably should. A man can't live on Frosted Flakes alone.
Frosted Reviews.
Kellogg's Frosted Reviews.
Mm. Honey Nut Frosted Reviews.
Watch out, man. We're going to get sued.
Hold on. I'm going to write that down. That's the title of the episode now.
Honey Nut Frosted Reviews.
Honey Nut Frosted Reviews.
It's the best.
Oh, what my the fuck God. Is wrong with us?
We're having a great time. That's all it is. That's what it's all about.
Oh, God. I'm losing it over here.
That means I'm doing my thing.
I would say, let me take a sip of my vanilla orange Coke, but I don't have that right now.
You ran out?
No, I'm drinking blueberry Diet Coke instead.
Oh, that one. How is that pronounced anyway? Is it a Kai, Asai, Akiai? I don't even know.
I have no fucking clue. I thought it was Acai, but I don't know.
I think when we're done recording, I'm going to have to go on the internet and just look that pronunciation up because it drives me nuts. It's A-C-A-I. Acai, maybe that's actually it. But I keep thinking I want to see Acai to be spelled S-A-I. Like, you know, like the weapon, Raphael. He's a rude dude. And his brother's a party dude. You know the jingle. But it just, I can't, I feel weird calling it Acai just because I expect to see it spelled differently.
But yeah, and like the C has the little hook on the bottom of it, and the I has an accent. I don't know how the fuck you say it. That's why I just call it blueberry Diet Coke. I ignore the other word.
It's just there. Blueberry, other berry flavor.
Blueberry and others.
Or blueberry plus.
Blueberry plus.
It could be anything, even a word I can't pronounce.
Speaking of two things being together,
we're gonna just make you loop back until you say like every possible thing that you can use to lead into it. Speaking of two aliens walking around the surface of a planet. Oh my god, oh my lord.
Yeah, let's get started before we go off on another tangent. So first game to talk about tonight is called Toe Jam and Earl Back in the Groove, developed and published by Human Nature Studios, released March 1st on Xbox One, Switch, PS4, and PC for $19.99. Toe Jam and Earl have crash-landed back on Earth, and Toe Jam and Earl Back in the Groove, a funky, fresh, roguelike adventure infused with old-school hip-hop and jam-packed with awesome throwbacks to the 1991 classic. Purnell, how is it?
Well, my first thing that came to mind when I came across this game was the realization, the actual realization that Toe Jam and Earl is one of our very first roguelike games. And I didn't even know it was a roguelike back then. I didn't even think about that. And I'm playing the game, not having that knowledge in my head. And I'm just like, wait a minute, this is a roguelike game. What the hell is this? You know, because it's a game that's notoriously known, a genre known for being difficult and punishing. And yet Toe Jam and Earl back in the day was very popular amongst just everybody. It was generally a good casual game. So I didn't expect that. But as for the game itself, so I'm seriously confused about how this worked out. Because I believe that they promoted it as like a sequel to the Toe Jam and Earl franchise. But it feels like a much, much better, like, expanded version of the first original game.
Mm.
But because it's like, you know, there was Toe Jam and Earl, then there was Toe Jam and Earl Panic on Funkatron, then Toe Jam and Earl Mission to Earth. And as you also may remember, each of those games changed the formula very much from the previous game. Like, they were not the same games. And unfortunately, the first is the one that's still the most fondly remembered because the other two didn't quite carry their weight like people wanted them to. So with this game, they kept the new characters that they introduced, even added a few new characters, and plopped them down to a gameplay reminiscent of the very first game. You have crash landed on a weird variant of Earth that got sucked into a black hole because one of the characters decided to hit the wrong button while activating the subwarper on their Ratmaster 5000 spaceship, thereby resulting in them all having to find the pieces of their dismantled ship across this weird black hole warped variant version of Earth and then get home. And what that translates into is a series of stages that consist of you going from floor to floor, traversed by elevator hitting on each floor to escape to the next level. But every once in a while, as you reach a floor, you'll get notification that there's like a piece of the spaceship on that floor that you have to acquire in order to leave. Now, the way the game works, like, you just pretty much just walk around. Like, there's no like run button or anything. You just kind of strut around the map. You can swim sometimes. There's water on the level. And when you go underwater, there's like a breathing gauge, an oxygen gauge rather. And if you run out of oxygen, well, I don't know what happens. I never drowned because I'm not crazy. But as you're also trying to walk around and explore, you are accosted by various unhip and uncool earthlings. It's kind of funny. They all got sucked into a black hole and Earth is kind of warped, and yet they're too busy being like doing what humans do, like mow the lawn and ride a Segway and walk around eating ice cream to pay attention to the fact that they're in a pretty bad situation. But I digress. Humans are stupid and they're chasing you because why not? And if they hit you, they pretty much do damage to you and then ultimately kill you, resulting in you losing a life. You cannot hurt them by normal means. So if you see a human, you have to run away and just escape. But in order to assist you, there are two things that exist on the maps. There are good humans that are noted by like a sparkle or a glimmer. And if you walk up to them and press a button, they may offer you various favors. Like, there might be one where he will allow you to level up if you acquire enough experience from the map, which you get by walking around, shaking objects for items, and things of that nature. There's also guys that can heal you. There's guys that will keep enemies from attacking you. And there's a wide array of various good earthlings and even some Funkatron aliens that will assist you on the map. The other thing that can help you in the game are presents. Presents are a very major roguelike factor in this game because they are items that are strewn about the map, sometimes identified, sometimes not, that do a variety of different things when you open them. Some might give you rocket skates. Some might kill you outright. Some might, you know, just give you a large boost of experience, but in exchange, you have to burp every couple steps, which makes it harder for you to get around the map. There are a ton of different presents in this game, a large variety, and some of which you unlock as you play through the game by finding wacky flying presents that will sometimes pop up on the map. And if you catch it, it will add a present to the register of things you can earn or use. If you manage to get every piece of the ship, you beat the game, quote unquote, beat the game. And I say that because this game is designed to be played multiple times. So at the beginning, you can do a tutorial, which will be like, hey, here's the game, walk around. And there'll be like a bunch of signs that are posted where you walk up to it and they'll say, here's how you do this thing. Here's how this would work. Basically just getting you into the swing of things.
Yeah.
And then after you beat the tutorial, there is something called a fixed world. I didn't do any actual doodling or mapping. And honestly, I beat it on my first run, so I don't know. But I believe fixed world means just that. Every floor that you will come across is exactly the same every time you go in. No randomization. And if you get all the shit parts there, you beat the run. You beat the fixed world. You can always go back if you want to, but it's considered beat, quote unquote. After that, you unlock random world, which is where it gets wacky randomized. You don't know what aliens will be on which floor, what floor will, what the floor layout will be like, so on and so forth. And the goal, of course, is still get all the shit parts. And the last mode you unlock is random world hard, which is pretty much exactly as it sounds. Most of the presents are unidentified, which means you have to find identifying presents to identify unidentified presents. Ho, say that three times fast. Or you have to pay people to identify them for you using money that you can find. Now, in the original game, you could pick between Toe Jam or Earl to explore the maps. And in this game, Toe Jam and Earl are available just as before, both their new versions and their old classic versions. And in addition to that, you can use two new aliens, Letitia, and I think her name was LaWanda, and they have their own quirks. And you can unlock three other aliens, because each time you beat the game, you unlock one new alien and possibly a new hat, which gives you like weird properties on stages, like invisibility and such.
I want to say LaWanda was from Toe Jam and Earl 3.
She was. Not LaWanda.
Letitia.
Letitia was. Yeah. She was from the Xbox one. I'm pretty sure she was just meant to be like Queen Latifah, which is hilarious because it's pretty accurate. But each character in this game, though, unlike the original game, has different stats that are attributed to them and makes them each unique. So I don't remember all the stat types. There's like present, like quantity, so you can count how many presents you can carry, your hit point bar size, your luck factor, and basically opening presents that are broken without them exploding on you, stuff like that. And in addition to that, they each start with their own set of items that you can come in from with the start. Like one might start with skates, one might start with Icarus wings, and then they also have like a sort of perk. Like Letitia does more damage when she throws tomatoes at enemies. Those tomatoes being a present that you can find. And if you find them in like a form of a slingshot or tomato rain, that's how you can damage enemies in the game. So that is pretty much the game. It's a good game. The only real fault that I had with it, and this is a corny one, but hopefully something that they patch in later. When you the interact button in the game is one button. I don't even remember which one it was. Whichever one is on the right side of the controller. I play games by feel now than what the letters say, to be honest with you. But the interact button is also shared with the item use button. And what that means is if you're using an item that is activated by pressing the action button and you want to talk to a good earthling or shake a tree or do anything else that would just be an action, you can't do it until the item wears off. And I find that extremely annoying, and it also results in me hoarding presents like it was going out of style. Oh, look at that 90s reference, that buzz statement, going out of style! but it was something that I felt that if they were to patch in like the means of which, even if they just made it a separate button, make it so that you can use items and talk to and interact with objects, that would really go a long way in making this game awesome, more awesome to me, because it's kind of interesting. I wasn't a huge fan of the original Toe Jam and Earl. I mean, I liked the theme of it and all, but whenever I watch people play it, because I was a Super Nintendo family, we never bought the Toe Jam and Earl. But whenever I'd watch friends play it, it's just like they were moving really slowly and things just needed to move, you know, like you need to get more frantic or something.
Yeah.
But this game, I feel like if someone were to say, you haven't played Toe Jam and Earl, you gotta get on this. I wouldn't even talk about the Genesis game, but I'd just refer them to this. Because this is a perfect recreation and improvement of a classic game, so much so that I don't even think you need to go back to the old game anymore. And I even get into the co-op aspect of the game, which is awesome. Two friends, and I think four online, can actually explore together to find all the shit parts and get off the mat, which can result in a fair bit of chaos when you're all trying to escape humans and figure out where each other are to get to the elevator and get off the map and all that stuff. It's just a genuinely good game. How good is it? Macaulay Culkin put money into it. That guy did. You know, I mean, what is the like? But, yeah, they're back in the groove and then some.
Well, then $20 on it. What's your verdict?
I think it's an absolute worth it. Buy it.
I already did.
Oh, you cheeky bastard.
Yeah, I saw it release and I didn't even wait for a review. I'm like, I'm buying new Toe Jam. I have to.
Toe Jam and Earl. I also like their voices for some reason too. Hey, just, yo, Leticia, what you doing, girl? Man, Toe Jam, you better get out of my face. Oh, so snap. Damn.
Love
such
it.
A weird thing, but a great game.
Awesome. Moving on, next game to talk about is called Beat Cop, developed by Pixel Crow, published by 11-Bit Studios, released March 5th on Xbox One, PS4, and Switch for $14.99. A retro pixel art style adventure in New York inspired by 80s cop shows. You are Jack Kelly and you've been framed for murder. Now, as a regular beat cop, you have to find out who did that. Expect thick crime story, a lot of black humor, and all the other things you can find on the streets of Brooklyn. Purnell, tell us about Beat Cop.
Beat Cop is going to appeal to a very niche audience, and I don't say that in a bad way at all. In fact, I think that's part of the game's charm, is it did its own thing, and either you like it or you don't. But the lead into what it is pretty much exactly as you kind of described. It is meant to sort of carry on a lampoon feel of classic 90s cop films, which includes the language and like the gruffness that those movies carry with their cast members. Your main character was originally a detective. He gets framed for jewelry theft from a high-ranking senator's house. And of course, being that this guy is a senator, he wants blood and he uses his power to get the, you know, the law enforcement agency to bump you down to pretty much literal beat cop, as in the title. And your job is pretty much to be like one of the lowest ranking members of the police force and walk up and down the streets of a specific New York block and hand out parking tickets. That's the game is bigger than that, but that is the way they definitely start the game off. And it actually feels weird because the game's first mission after you kind of walk around and learn the neighborhood is pretty much, hey, you need to ticket five cars a day. Which means throughout the course of a game day that runs in not real time, but in the game world's time, you have to ticket five cars with a button. Like as you walk up, press the button, you have to know what you're ticketing them for. And if you ticket them for the wrong thing, you will draw complaints. So you have to actually be like, oh, they're parked in a bad spot. And then once you ticket them and leave the thing, sometimes they'll run, someone will run up and say, no, man, you can't take my car. You can't give me a ticket. And they'll try to talk their way out of the ticket. And you have to either be like, nah, man, get the heck out of here. I'm ticketing you. Or what's in it for me? Like, yeah, $20 bill. Yeah, I'll pocket that. And it's surprisingly funny. Like, I actually got a lot of joy. And I go, oh, yeah, I see that car badly parked. I'm going to ticket that bastard. And sometimes you got to ticket it for other things like, bad tires and things of that nature. The game will pretty much tell you each day, we're just going to be ticketing people for. Now, that may sound rather boring, but I can assure you that it is not. Because in addition to doing that, you also have to kind of keep peace on the neighborhood block, because there are two rival gangs, the Italians and the Darkies. I'm saying that because that's what the game actually calls them. So that's another aspect of the game. Like, you have to come in knowing that you're getting some kind of interesting, colorful, quote-unquote, humor. But you're basically dealing with two rival street gangs, and there's like, you know, of course, like every once in a while they might want you to do a favor for them, and you're trying to balance favor between the two street gangs as well as the legitimacy of being on the police force itself. You are going from different stores on the block, getting to know the vendors and the owners, and helping them keep the peace as well. Like sometimes someone might say, hey, oh my God, someone robbed this store. And you'll get a call on the radio saying, such and such porn shop got robbed. Get down there, stat. And you have to actually run down the street with the stamina gauge draining as you do it. Try to catch the guy and handcuff him in the middle of the street. Call the cops, take him away. Stamina is a limited product. If you overrun and overexert yourself, you will get tired and you won't be able to run anymore. And how do you get your stamina gauge back up? you buy hot dogs from a street vendor. And it's glorious because you have to walk up and like, oh, man, give me a hot dog. It's like, here you go, $3, man. And you pay for the hot dog and you eat it. the game is oddly enough overwhelming, but it's intended to be. You are not supposed to be able to do everything that the game throws at you. You just kind of make the best efforts that you can and hold on tight for dear life. Because while you're also, like I said, you're doing all this stuff, you're trying to keep peace in the city, but there are a few other hiccups in addition to that that makes the game even more wild. One is that in addition to the normal game running, there's also like a mainline plot that happens throughout the game where you are slowly piecing together who framed you, why, and how to get out of it. And this happens by way of different events on different days. I believe the days themselves are scripted as far as which days it's going to happen. But nonetheless, when they come up, you have to handle them accordingly, all the events that take place, and be able to progress with that plot line. And if you don't, unfortunately, I think you just the trail runs cold and butt it up, bomb, done. Another thing that factors in is apparently your ex-wife is bugging the police officer, the police sergeant, about you paying alimony. And unfortunately, your police chief is also a complete dick who hates you. And he's like, look here, bitch, get that money to that woman so she stop nagging me or you're fired. So every couple of days, you also owe alimony payments. Oh, alimony geez. Payments that actually increase. So you have to earn money for that purpose too, which means every once in a while you might find yourself a little low on cash, resulting in you possibly taking a bit of a bribe from one of the rival gangs, or maybe every once in a while that guy needing to pay out of his ticket is looking kind of sweet to you. You might want to take that bit of cash, you know, just to kind of push yourself along. And of course, unfortunately, I've noticed one time I did it, and at the end of the day, when the game reports on how well you did, how your favor changed between all the different groups, it'll be like, hey, you lost favor with the police because an undercover agent saw you take that bribe from that guy on the street.
Oh,
like,
no. Gosh.
Like, damn it, who saw? Who snitched? Like, I actually yelled that. I was like, who the hell snitched?
Snitches get stitches, bitches.
Snitches, pretty much. It's like, it was... It surprisingly drew me into the game. I actually yelled about the guy ratting me out. A fake little digital like blippy blop man yelling me out or ratting me out. I honestly came away liking this game. It's a weird case. I guess you remember how Harvest Moon was, how the game was farming. You farmed. It is a normal job, but the game world made it fun because they made the farming fun and they made the events around the farming equally engaging and enjoyable. I feel like Beat Cop did something very similar. I like the world. I like the fact that each day you go into it and there's like some small like story events, but then also just general chaos on the streets. Kid Rumpsy, hey, help me find my cat, mister. And you're like, I ain't got time for this, man. I'm trying to stop a shootout. And you're like, you know what? It's for the kids. Bullets can wait. Let me go find your cat. And it's kind of nice to just be able to do things like that. But I will say, I believe this might be one of those games. Like, there's like a few. I believe there's like maybe a few endings to it, but it might be a one and doneer depending on how engaged you get with games. But I think that one is a fun one, which in itself means that for the price, I think you're actually getting your money's worth out of it for the experience that you're playing for.
Well, you're jumping ahead, but $15. What do you think, Ben?
I think this is another buy. I came away thoroughly impressed with this game. It's enjoyable. If you feel as though I might have missed a beat or something, let me know. But oh, I did miss a beat. Bambo! Though I actually think I did miss one. In addition to the stores, you do also sometimes have to engage with the tenants in different buildings on the block, too. And sometimes those engagements can be pretty freaking hilarious. But I won't spoil what those engagements may be. Some of them are on the rated G side, some are a little on the R side. Point is, they're all fun.
Nice. I'm going to have to grab this one. This has been on my radar, but I think you sold me on it.
I'm glad to hear that, because like I said, this game deserves those sales, man. It's very creative. And even at the beginning of the game, they outright say, just have fun. We made this game to lampoon and spoof 90s movies. Don't take it too seriously. Just have a good time with it.
Awesome. Sounds good.
It is good.
All right. Next game to talk about is called Blast Zone Tournament, developed and published by Victory Lap Games, released February 28th on PS4 and out of Steam Early Access for $19.99, coming later this year to Xbox One as well. Blast Zone Tournament is the fast-paced game where fun meets explosive combat. Take on challenges in the fully loaded single-player campaign to level up and prepare to compete in numerous multiplayer arenas. Team up with friends and blast opponents as you go head-to-head to see who will be the last bomber standing. Purnell, what is Blast Zone Tournament?
Blast Zone Tournament is Bomberman. Review over.
All right. Like, $20. What do you think?
Honestly, I could end it with that, but that would not be fair to the game itself. There is more to discuss about this title. But Blast Zone Tournament is pretty much like the Bomberman structure. There is a single player mode, and with that single player mode, I believe they tell it in the form of like a sort of story. Like each level you go through, there's an announcer named, like, I guess, like Blast Barker, kind of ripping on like Bob Barker. And he's like, kind of like, hey, welcome back, contestant. Your job here is to blow up robo dogs, or to blow up these contestants, or to blow up that lady who's a jerk. And your job is to run through the stage blowing up boxes with your bombs, collecting power-ups to make your bomb blast radius extend longer, and like various other power-ups like a kick and things of that nature to blow up all these enemies, or sometimes get to the end of the stage or whatever. And that is pretty much how Bomberman worked too. But one thing that they did change, which I thought was interesting, is that in Bomberman regular, there was the normal power-ups, like the power, the bomb up, blast up, and whatnot. But you also might remember like the punch and the kick and the throw, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this game, they refer to those as ultimates. And when you pick the power-up up, you get a limited number of uses for each one you get. So if you get the kick, you don't have an infinite number of kicks. You get 3 kicks. So make them count.
Mm.
It's interesting. I can picture someone being like, oh, that's some bullshit. I should be able to just kick when I want to kick. But there's a part of me that thinks, you know, that's actually not a bad thought. It really does make those kicks count. You can't just spam it like you used to in Bomberman. And boy, did I spam those bastards. Believe me. But by making them like a limited resource, it adds a little bit more strategy and deliberate methods to what you're doing. As you beat the stages in each of the worlds, you unlock experience points. And when you earn up experience points, you level up. And each time you level up, there is a sort of roulette that's available, which you can utilize to unlock various cosmetic items for your little bomber person or contestant. That allows you to customize your character to how you see fit, and then either use them in the single player mode or the online mode, which I think is the main interesting aspect to this game, because while it does a lot of stuff that Bomberman does do, it also does a lot of stuff that Bomberman did not do. Like, the matches, I feel, are a fair bit more customizable. You can have up to 32 players in a match, which is ridiculous, by the way.
Yeah,
really, Bomber, really ridiculous.
Bomber Battle Royale is no joke.
It is not. And it's weird that while, like, I think one of the biggest and most enjoyable aspects when I play Bomberman is like knowing the people and, like, you know, pretty much yelling, "Ah, I killed you, friend number G or G friend two or something like that." I will say that when you're playing with that amount of like strangers and that amount of chaos, it's still really enjoyable, albeit again very chaotic, because 32 people on the screen triggering bombs at the same time is nuts. But there's a variety of different modes you can play. A number of them are very Bomberman-esque. Like, there's the blastic, there's the paint mode, which they refer to as blast in this, where the goal is to use bomb blast to paint the map your color. There is team mode, where you just team up to kill the other players. But then there's like a couple other unique modes, which I'm not used to seeing, which, like, for example, there was one called King mode, which is, I've never seen it even in any of those kinds of games, where the idea is that one of the players in the team is the king, and the goal is to protect the king from being killed. The king cannot drop bombs. He can only pick up and he can only throw bombs. And I think he can kick them, but he can't place bombs himself unless he's the only player left on his team.
Oh, that's cool.
It is cool. And if you make the map big enough, it means that you end up making it such you have places to hide. You can kind of run away from dudes before all the blocks get destroyed. It makes for a different way to play the game, a way in which that I've never experienced before. Just the general sense of keep away. I can't actually defend myself. Protect me. And a Bomberman game feels really weird. But there are a variety of different modes of which you can like choose from if you want to build an exhibition match. You can increase or decrease the size of the map, either from like the traditional classic size of a map to like 21 by 21 grid, which is really large.
Damn.
There are a number of like pre-designed like block configuration you can select from. So it's not just always, hey, the blocks are randomized. You can be like, hey, I like this block configuration. You can just pick that, which is a lot more interesting than it would sound. And this is all just exhibition type stuff, like, as in like, you customizing a match and playing it in your living room or something. But if you want to go online, you can go online too. And I think, I can't tell for sure what they do, because it lets you pick if you want to do Battle Royale and like two other things. And when you select it, it just says, here you go, you're in this match, go kill all these other stranger people. And I'm not sure if that means that when the game kicks in and starts up a season mode, whether or not the seasons will determine what mode you're playing and things of that nature. But so far, it was like, hey, jump in, kill these dudes, have a good time playing it. And it was really chaotic and frantic. I had a good time doing it. And each time you win a match, you kind of rank up a bit. You get your stats will get incremented. It tracks your stats and it ranks you across like pretty much the world for that season of play. So you're pretty much playing for glory as well as just for having fun. The level structure in the game for single player, to go back to that, is a surprisingly weird one, because I was a little confused at first. When you start the game, you're on level 1-1. Then you go to level 2-1, then 3-1, 4-1, and so on and so forth. Seems kind of weird, right? Like, where are the other ones? Where is 1-2 and 1-3? And it turns out that what that is once you've played through the stage the first time, you can go back to it from the menu, and you can select that level in a new challenge or a new goal. So you select 1-2 once you've beaten 1-1. And you can beat that level's goal. And once you beat that, you can go to 1-3's goal. And if you beat all three, you get that much more experience points to level up your guy to get more roulette pools, to get more custom gear for your bomber man or bomber person. It's an interesting concept, but one that I came to think was pretty okay. I like just being like, okay, the goal, I'm trying to unlock stuff by beating these levels. It's not necessarily just run through and blow them up to get to the end and fight the boss like the classic Bomberman games used to be. You're actually trying to accrue experience points to get gear to unlock more character parts, which was my favorite aspect of Bomberman 64, which was, you know, finding gear parts to unlock Bomberman costumes, which was fun. So I feel like the only real negative I have for the game, and it's a kind of a small gripe when you really break it down, is that while the gameplay itself is fun, I did find myself comparing it to Bomberman for obvious reasons, and I felt like the character charm wasn't as prevalent, because just generally speaking, I've known Bomberman forever.
Yeah.
But that, I think, is a personal gripe, and one that I believe could easily be circumvented so long as you're just genuinely having fun with the game. And the game itself is fun. It's built off of a proven method, a proven system, but they made their own personal tweaks that I think are actually good tweaks. And that 32-man riot is ridiculous if you can get one of those going. And hopefully you will be able to. I hope that a lot of people are playing this game so that the numbers can stay up.
Yeah, that's probably my chief concern with the game, is whether or not the player base is going to be there. I don't know if they have cross-platform play enabled or not. It would be nice to see, especially with it also coming to Xbox later this year, to have cross-play and have three audiences all together playing the game. I don't know how feasible that is. I don't know if it's something that's on their radar or if it's even in the game now. I didn't see anything that mentioned cross-platform play or anything, but I worry about the size of the audience and if there's going to be enough players there to sustain the game and not just have you playing against the cheating bastard bots all the time.
Man, that box does cheat. What a cheater box. But damn, I guess that's bots. That's like the unfortunate challenge when it comes to recommending games like this, because you really can't necessarily say, I don't know, you shouldn't buy it unless there's a player base there, because you won't have a player base there unless enough people say, I want a chance that there's going to be a player base there to be the player base. Yeah. So I think the best thing that we can do is pretty much just say if you, well, we should go into that with, you know the drill.
$20. Give me your verdict.
If you like Bomberman and you're looking forward to a little bit more than what we got from the previous offering in the sense of like more modes, that larger player build I mentioned before, and accessible, unlockable customization parts, this or character costumes and stuff, this I think is a good time. Just go in knowing that you're hoping to bolster a player base so that 32-man arena will stay manned.
Yes.
But the hope is, but going with the hope, because the single player game is still good as well. And you could also have just like matchups with your friends if it comes down to it. So, but be the player base, be the player that forms the player base so that those people will actually be there.
Yes. If you build it, they will come.
Damn right. And don't use cheap parts.
Yeah. Always.
That's right. Always low prices, always Walmart.
One last game for you to discuss tonight is called Viking Sigurd's Adventure, developed by A Real Check. Yes, that is the name that they have on on Steam. It is under A Real Check, like Czechoslovakian.
Oh,
yes, A Real Check. Ah, get it.
As opposed to a fake one.
Exactly. Published by Game Den, released February 18th on Steam for $4.99. Viking Sigurd's Adventure gives you a chance to become a brave warrior hero, shanking hordes of enemies and solving mysteries on the way to his main goal, the battle with a mighty dragon named Fafnir. Purnell, what is Viking?
Viking is a 2D side-scroller, which is weird in the sense that as I was playing it, I kind of started giving it a little bit of guff. So the game graphically isn't the most, it's not the most, visually stunning title. And it also wasn't a major draw. Like the plot, I didn't really care. And as the characters were kind of talking to each other in the vignettes between the levels, the dialogue was a little stilted. And there was just areas where I was like, I'm not really all that pushing for this. But I played the game because I wanted to review the game and talk about it like I needed to. And then something strange happened. And that as I played it, I was trying to actually fulfill the level goals. And I wanted to keep going. And I kept playing it.
So it grew
gaming
on you.
Yes, gaming is weird in that that can happen. And I should now talk about what the game itself is that I am discussing. So, like I said, it's a 2D side-scrolling platformer. And you go into the levels, you can choose between either a sword, an axe, or a... No, I just named them all. A sword or an axe as your go-to weapon as you run in. I personally notice no discernible difference between the two. So if they look cool to you, they look cool, just use it. You run through the levels, collecting coins, killing monsters, and looking for secret treasure chests, which contain runes. Those runes can be taken back to the hub world when you beat a stage to unlock various upgrades for your character, such as increased damage from your melee weapon, or a multiplier that increases the value of the coins you find on the ground, or the increased damage to your ranged weapon, which in this case is a throwing axe, which you also have on every level. You start out with only being able to carry two, but as you level up that throwing axe option, you can carry more than two. You can carry up to four, six, possibly even eight, but I got cheap and stopped at like six. So as you unlock the different, upgrades to your character, you pretty much just, I shouldn't say it, not so much as you unlock, blah, blah, blah. One of the upgrades you can buy also with your gold coins, as opposed to runes, is advancements on your throwing axes, your axe, and your sword. But like I said before, the sword and the axe, I think, are just cosmetic things. And as you level them up, each one of them, the weapon trees, have the exact same damage output. So the second level sword does 12 damage. So is the second level axe, up to like 18 or 20 on both trees. So I don't get why they did that. However, the throwing axe does have its own growth and its own power. And since it, again, is your ranged weapon, it is worth upgrading that along with one of the two melee weapons for sure. If you would like to, in turn, also buy more coins or more runes, you can exchange one for the other at the shop. You can exchange one rune for 100 coins or buy one rune for 400 coins. What that says to me is why the hell you would buy a rune is beyond me, considering they show you right there and what the exchange rate is. Like, why the hell would you even do that? But I digress. The game itself, like I said, is not There's not much to write home about, but it plays solidly. It plays fine. You go left to right, you can jump. There's a double jump. When you attack monsters, whether they be flying or ground, you can stab at them, you can throw a melee weapon in it, or you can kind of do like a jump stomp. You can only stomp them once and then lay on the ground or you'll take damage. So you can't be like Mario stomping 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 and kill them. You have to stomp once, hit the ground, and try to stomp on them again.
Yeah.
But, and each level, the goal is either, there's like three little champion, like you know my thing, my usual rant, though admittedly I've had to use this in a long time. Every stage has three stars.
Oh, no.
That you can fulfill. One of the stars is killing all the monsters on the stage. The other next star is to find every coin. And the last star is to find every rune that's hidden on the stage. And if you go back to the level, you can actually try again. If you get to the end, you're like, oh, crap, I missed one rune. The game will note that you only missed one rune. It will only require you to find that one rune to get the goal.
Oh, that's good.
Unfortunately, though, it doesn't apply to monsters. So let's say you got a rune and the game doesn't make you get it again, but there were three monsters on the way to that rune and you didn't complete the monster goal. Well, guess what you're going to go get anyway, because you got to kill those three monsters to fulfill the monster goal. So basically, I almost like the most important goal to hit is the monster one, simply because of the fact that no matter what, it doesn't really keep track of how many monsters you could get to kill them all each time in order to get it. Challenge in this game, it's there, but it's minor, to almost to the point of non-existent, because there's no penalty for dying. If you die, you go back to the checkpoint, but everything you've killed leading up to your death is still dead. Every item you've collected leading up to your death is still collected. So you can essentially whittle down what you need to do and just keep dying as you make it through. And eventually it's like, okay, now I got all those hard to reach coins. Now I can just skip that and get to the end of the stage. So that's a weird thing, but it's also, I'm pretty sure it was meant to be a very casual game too. So
yeah, it was geared towards younger audiences. So
in which case there it is. That's not even a fault. That's a feature. so the game is really easy as far as penalties are concerned. One gripe I did have, aside from like anything that you might have gleaned from what I just said throughout the review, is that the controller, I feel like, I mean, unless I was missing something, I feel like they kind of half supported the controller. Like, I usually, when I play games, I usually plug in like an Xbox 360 wired controller, which I should probably really upgrade at some point. but it lets me walk left to right with the controller, and that's it. So I still have to use the cross pad, or sorry, the ASDF on the keyboard to walk left, right, and jump. And there's like a button to throw an axe and to swing your weapon and to jump all on the keyboard. And since I can't map those buttons, sort of getting like something like Joy 2 Key, I guess, I have to pretty much use the keyboard.
Yeah.
There's no like intrinsic controller support.
Well, but maybe they'll work on patching full controller support in.
That's a good idea. Hopefully they do, because they should. Because platformers on a keyboard.
Yeah. Minor gripes aside, though, it's only $5. So what do you think?
You know what? Just because it's $5, I want to yell, fuck it, why not? It's a fucking why not?
Why not?
Because the game, like I said, it does what it needs to do. I like the fact that you said it was meant for younger audiences. I think it would definitely fit the bill there. It's not going to like raise any flags and make you sing hallelujah, this is the best platformer ever. But if you do buy it and you know what you're getting into from this review, I think you'll have a good time, because it does what platformers need to do and is executed in a way that I didn't feel bored as I was playing through it for the purpose of this review. I enjoyed my play.
Cool. Sounds good.
Does it sound as good as Chocolate Berry Crunch Berries?
See, now if it was Captain Crunch with chocolate balls in there and not fruity berries.
No, that ruins it. No, it has to be chocolate with berries. Think of it think of it like chocolate ice cream with strawberries, or chocolate or strawberries dipped in chocolate. You know, that idea. All right,
I see that.
Like, that's definitely, I think that was definitely the vibe they were going for with that product. And it works. I'm telling you, it's tasty. If they're still out there somewhere and you see them, you buy those bitches.
I'll give them a go. If I see them, I'll give them a go, just for you.
Yeah, man. And if I see orange vanilla Coke, which I probably won't, I'll buy those too.
You know, I'll drink one just for you.
just for me.
Yeah.
If I think hard enough and dream hard enough, I'll also be, I can taste it while you drink it. I just want orange vanilla Coke. I just want to try it.
Oh, man. Purnell, it's always a pleasure having you on chatting. Do you have any final words before we move on?
Not just keep playing them games, enjoy life, and winter is almost over. Thank freaking God, because I can't feel my penis.
All right, moving on. We've got our good friend Chris Taylor joining. Chris, how are you doing?
Hey, doing all right.
How was your weekend?
How was my weekend? What was my weekend? Largely, it's just been cleaning out my room, especially the closet, because my girlfriend's moving back to America after a year in Japan, and so she's gonna have a lot of stuff. So I emptied out the closet, and now I'm trying to find homes for all these boxes of mail.
Oh boy,
things like that. Yeah, so you know that's the boring news of what I did this weekend. Pretty excited though, because today actually I found out that my physical edition of Reverie on the Switch is being shipped out.
Nice.
Yeah, I like that game so much that when Play Asia announced that they were doing a physical edition, I was like, I'll take it.
Nice.
So yeah, looking forward to jumping back into that one.
What was that one about again? I forget.
That was the New Zealand-based sort of Zelda meets Earthbound type of game. Yeah, where you're playing through an old legend and, you know, like mythical characters from apparently New Zealand lore. And I really, really liked it. It was very much my thing. So
I'm still got real hoping excited. It comes to Xbox one day. My fingers are still crossed.
I hope, yeah. I mean, I don't know if this physical version's all sold out, but I hope so, because I hope these guys do well. I always really like to champion little games like this, because I always, A, want the developers to be rewarded for their work, and B, I want them to make more. So, I always tell people, go out and buy it.
That's a good way to do it.
Yeah.
But speaking of Zelda-style indie games, we should probably get on to what we're here to talk about.
Yes, indeed.
First game that you're here to talk about is called Anodyne, developed by Analgesic. And I hate this word so much. Analgesic Productions? Is that how
Analgesic.
It is?
Analgesic. Yeah, I think it's Analgesic, but I think you're as close as you can get.
I always stumble on that word. Always.
Mm.
It's such a weird word.
Is Analgesic the original developer of it? Because
yes,
okay. Because I know it was originally developed by two, I think, Japanese people, like at the end of college.
And, I don't know if they're Japanese or not. They were on the show and they didn't seem Japanese, so maybe I'm wrong.
Maybe not. Maybe I and Wikipedia are wrong. I don't. Let me look again. I don't know. This is what I get for researching things last minute. Like, I play the game for long enough, and then, like, while Skype is loading, I'm like, well, I'll read a little bit about this game now. So.
Anyway, published by No, released February 28th on the Switch for $9.99. In this unique Zelda-like game, explore and fight your way through surreal and creepy nature, urban, and abstract-themed areas in the human young's subconscious, evoked by a 16-bit era visual style and a moody, dreamlike soundtrack. Chris, tell us about this one.
All right. Well, yeah, I was going to say that this is one of those, you know, we're seeing them a little bit more now, and that's, you know, Zelda-style retro throwback type games. But in finding out that this game was made back all the way back in 2013, which makes it as old as this show. I said all the way back to 2013. That's great. It means that it kind of predates all of these other ones that we're seeing. And actually, yeah, I was interested, like, not knowing the nationality of the developers aside, I was pretty interested in some of the facts about it, that, you know, they developed it basically in college, that they used the Pirate Bay to get it upvoted to get greenlit on Steam, however that works.
That's interesting.
I was like, I was like, the Pirate Bay. I don't think I've even heard about them since 2013. Like, I don't even know what they're up to now. But anyway,
I'm sure they're still BitTorrenting like crazy.
Maybe. I don't know. It's one of those things, like, you know how Napster became like a legit music site?
Oh yeah.
Really didn't do well. So I don't know. Maybe they went legit and then failed. Who knows? I don't even have the internet in front of me.
Anyway.
Anyway, back to the game. So Anodyne is, yes, it's a game that stars a, I don't know anything about Young. It stars a person named Young who appears to wear glasses and a white hoodie, has kind of shaggy hair, but it's 8-bit style graphics, so that's all you're going to get. What we know kind of outside of the game, because the game doesn't really divulge this, within its dialogue, is that he is, in an unconscious state, or subconscious state. So you're basically going through a dream world, and therefore it is kind of surreal. And, they definitely, for the soundtrack to this one, they borrowed a little bit, I think, from the Hip Tanaka side of Earthbound soundtrack. That is to say, the really atmospheric, sort of droning, bending notes, things like that. I found it nostalgic. So I kind of appreciated that. It's not, it's not over the top. This game is subtle to the point. It's like, subtle to the extreme that sometimes you just don't know what's going on at all. But what I do appreciate about Anodyne is that it also has a sense of humor, and I really appreciated some of its jokes, and its jokes are very dry, subtle things. Like, there's some absurdity in the sense that, like, your weapon is actually a broom, and it's just the one thing you find, and when you show it to the wise old sage who's kind of tutorializing you through the first part of the thing, he's kind of like, really? A broom? That's an excellent weapon. He's like kind of side-eyeing you a little bit. And I was like, well, okay, broom until I get through the first dungeon or something, and then they'll give me the real thing. And nope, I've still got the broom. I'm a few dungeons in now, and it's still there.
And the trusty broom.
The trusty broom, and I appreciate that, as I say. The point of it is basically to go, like Zelda, you know, you explore and, you know, come across a dungeon, and then once you get through the dungeon, it gives you a key that takes you to another area of the map where there's another dungeon and another key. You fight bosses, and then there's a system of collecting cards, which are found in treasure chests. In fact, the game is very minimal on items that you can use or have any sort of real function. So most of the treasure chests in the game will contain just playing cards, like character cards, I guess you could say trading cards. Mm-hmm. For the different enemies that you fight and different characters that you meet, which, again, are pretty sparse. But once you collect all the cards in an area, it lights up a light on top of a portal that, you know, the whole world is connected by these shortcut portals that, you know, it's kind of like, it's one of my favorite games, and I can't remember. But, like, something like Soul Blazer or, like, you know, any one of those Super Nintendo games where they're like, you can go back to this area by jumping through this.
Yeah.
And, you know, so you have, the central hub and then all of the branches and such that you unlock. Funny enough, that actually reminded me a lot of Blossom Tale, which is another Zelda-like game that I reviewed last year that I really loved. And, so apparently, you know, there is a point to collecting all these cards, because sometimes you get to an area and it's like you need to have 4 trading cards to continue. And, you know, once you get the 4 trading cards, you can get up in there and, you know, get a reward, which in the first case, the 4 card area was an extra life thing. It gives you life shards, I guess you could say. that function basically like hearts in Zelda. A little fairy comes and gives them to you, actually like carves them out of the blackness of the outer screen, which is kind of funny. Oh man. And one more Zelda gag that I loved in this game was, seemed to be apropos of nothing. I ran across a merchant who was sitting, you know, on a rug, and he had his three items in front of him, exactly like a Zelda game. And when you talk to him, he's just complaining about how he needs a box so he can haul his stuff around. Because, you know, and then, like, you look at the items, and he's like, you know, you can buy bicycle clip shoes, which will help you be faster on a bicycle, which you don't have. And it's like, they're $499.99. And then you can also purchase, he's like, upgrade your weapon to a gun, only $699.99, you know. And then, like, the other item is a bag so you can hold more money. And the joke of all this is that there's no money in the game. As far as I understand, you don't collect a single cent. So just the fact that he's out there trying to sell all this stuff is great to me.
I love it.
Yeah, the dungeons are super clever. I really actually like the way that they're laid out, and the puzzles that you kind of have to solve. They're, because the game is so minimal on items and interactions, it's not so much a thing of like trying to find the right item. It's just trying to use the few things that you have like effectively. And of course, it relies on some abstraction. For instance, if you see a pile of garbage essentially on the ground, you can sweep it up with your broom, but then the next place where you sweep with your broom will, you know, put that garbage there. So it's basically a way to move these piles of garbage. Well, those piles of garbage are a way that you can float on the water. So, you know, if you put it on the water, then you can ride it like a raft. And then that will get you through some parts. And so I found that to be really cool. And yeah, like in total, it's, you know, it's really interesting. It's, you know, it's kind of dark and dreary, but also funny, which that's pretty much exactly my thing. So I really appreciate this one, and I'm actually looking forward to whatever happens next, kind of unraveling the mystery of it all, because the game really gives you nothing for story. They're just like, it all seems to be leading to something, but I have no idea what, and I'm hoping to find out.
Yeah, I need to go back and finish this game myself. I dove into it when we did the interview. By the way, if people want to hear more about the game, check out episode 417. We have an interview with the folks behind the game. But yeah, I really enjoyed it myself, and for $10, I want to know your opinion.
Yeah, $10, this is definitely worth it. I mean, it's a... funny enough, actually, just as an anecdote, a good friend of mine, who this is a kind of thing he tends to do, he played the game and he liked it so much, but he was like, this totally reminds me of you, so I'm just going to buy it for you on Steam. And I was like, great. So he bought it for me on Steam. And then my computer that I stream and do Steam stuff on, is down for repair. So I bought the game and was never able to play it.
Oh boy. So,
when this one came around, when I saw this was coming out on Switch, I requested this one because I really wanted to actually play it. And sure enough, my friend was correct, even though I still haven't played the copy of the game he bought for me. But so yeah,
hey, still played it.
Yeah, buy this game, and if you're able, buy it for a friend.
Awesome. We got one final game to talk about tonight. That's called Riddled Corpses EX, developed by Diabolical Mind and Cowcat, published by Cowcat, released March 2nd on the Switch for $9.99. Riddled Corpses EX is a twin-stick shooter made in the style of 8 and 16-bit arcade games. Travel through diverse locations packed with danger and huge bosses. Choose your character wisely and make good use of their abilities and the special items to progress and destroy the root of evil. Chris, how is your battle with the root of evil?
I didn't get to the root of evil, okay? I barely scratched the branches.
Oh, God.
Well, okay, so this is as they say, it's a twin-stick shooter. It's old-looking, you know, 16-bit style. So the thing about it, though, is that it's pretty high on the difficulty. However... and, you know, of course, it starts you over again at the beginning of the stage, unless you beat the entire stage, and then you can choose which stage you want to start on. And the however is that in this game, it it's not a roguelike because it's consistent every time. But any money that you gain in this game, which money, of course, is used for unlockables, you get to keep for the next, you know, playthrough and stuff like that. So it's very much a game that you just start over and over again. And every time you die, you know, you go back and improve something, you know, level up your character or try to save up enough to unlock the next character. And then, you know, so it's a game that you can basically eventually muscle your way through due to retaining resources, which is really cool. So, yeah, it's there's not, you know, the story is, you know, they try to be as 8-bit as possible. It's, I guess they tried to cure, they tried to do something to get rid of all the evil in the world, but it, of course, ended up waking up some ultimate evil that's now out there, and you have to stop it, you know, irony. And it's interesting because you start the game with John and Chloe, who are, you know, they're, I guess, the beginning team. And then the only character in a one-player game that you're able to play as initially is John. And John is Mr. Average. You know, he has no special skills. He just has medium stats all the way around. And, you know, you try to get as far as you can with him. And the first character I unlocked was, of course, Chloe, who goes about twice as fast. She moves around the map about twice as fast as him. But her gun is about 3 levels behind, but, you know, she has a thing called magnetism, which causes, you know, like, enemies drop gold bars, gold coins, gold bullions, lots of gold, and because she's magnetic, the gold all travels to her, so she can collect a lot more money than old John can, and it's at this point that I want to remind people that gold is not magnetic. I mean, it's not, you can't actually... I don't think gold is magnetized, right?
I have no clue. I don't know much about magnetic properties of metals.
Is gold magnetic? yeah. Yeah, it's if it's fake gold, it's magnetic. So enemies drop fake gold cuz you know there's a presence of iron. Anyways, so I just, that's my pedantic moment there. And then, you know, once she gets enough money, you can unlock a character that just collects twice as much gold. And then, that character can then, or, you know, whatever, you can collect the maximum amount of money and unlock one more character. And then, of course, with the maximum amount of money, you can unlock then 2 more characters for a total of 6. I found it interesting. 2 things that I found interesting was that the last 2 characters that you unlock, presumably when you're far enough in the game that you're able to collect 10,000 gold pieces. And in the first level, gold pieces are in increments of 1, 3, 5, and 8, occasionally 10. So that's how slowly you're collecting money. And these characters cost like 10,000. The 2 characters that are on the actual title screen are the last 2 characters you unlock in the game, and they seem to have nothing to do with the story. So I'm kind of curious. Maybe they just put them there because they're the sexy girls. Anyway, I wanted to also point out that one of their names is Norm.
Oh, boy.
Just Norm. So I found that interesting. The game doesn't offer any info on these characters or anything like that, so I was just kind of like, what's going on here? But no, I've actually, I've got the 2 characters so far, and I've been playing this game. This game, so once you start actually playing, they send zombies after you in waves. Now you're able, it's basically one screen initially that you're, where you play against a wave of zombies, and the wave of zombies has an HP bar. And the more zombies you destroy, the more, you know, the bar goes down, and then once it's down all the way, then you just sort of start to, the camera starts to move towards the next static area, and you kind of walk and shoot and you know, get the zombies going. Of course, your left stick moves you, your right stick just streams a constant fire of bullets that never run out, of course. And they have a couple of different power-ups, like, I mean exactly 2, and that is they have a time stopper and they have a bomb. a screen clearing bomb, which is really all you need in this kind of game. But I noticed that they, for both items, it's like they mapped them to the Y and the A buttons. And I was like, you can't map things to the face buttons in a twin stick shooter. You just, when you've got a horde of zombies coming after you, because these guys, they pile on the zombies. This game is never never wanting for zombies. they're just constant streams of zombies coming after you. It's incredible. It would easily burn out an NES, which is why I'm saying this is a 16-bit game. So, you know, the cool thing is, though, that I soon figured out is that also the shoulder buttons work for the special items. So they completely fixed that problem, and I'm very proud of them. It also has a toggleable CRT mode, which, as we know, not
you
toggleable.
Love.
I love it. I love to throw it on for 5 seconds and then turn it immediately off. I also, another touch that I love that's also absurd, which this is what caused me to research this game, because I was like, this game has to be an older game that they've, like, you know, added some features and then released, because the EX, for one, makes me think that. The other thing is that you can choose from two styles of soundtrack, and they've got the original quote-unquote soundtrack, which is, it's kind of 8-bit synthy, with a couple of, like, you know, more modern sounds, but still definitely like that kind of synthy 16-bit-ish sort of soundtrack. And then you can put on the quote-unquote new soundtrack, which is just strictly like NES-style music. Like, it actually sounds much older. So it's like you get to choose between two basically different versions of chiptune for the soundtrack. Both of them are good, by the way.
That works.
I prefer the original myself. I think it fits the game better, but if you're really, you know, if you're a Famitracker fan, then go ahead and throw on the quote unquote new soundtrack. So yeah, like basically, you know, you run around these hordes and waves of zombies. You can destroy cars and flaming barrels and, you know, just different things to basically light big groups of enemies on fire. Actually, if you blow up a car, it sets everything on the screen on fire. And they move a little faster, but they go down a lot quicker. And you want them to go down, because if you shoot enough of them in a continuous stream, you go into combo mode, which allows you to, you know, it makes your gun a lot stronger temporarily until you break the combo. And that really helps things along, especially in the boss fights and stuff. Because boss fights and mini boss fights, they don't stop sending waves of zombies after you. You just have to deal with a boss in the middle of all of them, which is amazing. And yeah, some of these bosses can get up to about half the size of the screen, and they're moving after you, and you have to like get around them. So
nice.
You really, yeah. And the bosses also have bullet hell style bullet patterns that come out at you. So it gets really intense, this game does. All this to say, again, you know, and you have about, I think you start with 3 lives, so if you get hit once by anything, it loses you a life, and if you pick up a med kit or purchase a med kit before you start the level, then you get extra lives, but it's just extra hits. So essentially you get 3 hits. And yeah, if you get, you know, game over, then you'd start at the beginning of the level, and, you know, you retain your money, so you're able to power up your character. And when you power up your characters, they really power up, so I really appreciate that. You know, less than an hour, and I went from struggling through the first wave of enemies to, like, being able to blast them all in one hit and get all the way to the boss, you know?
Nice.
So, yeah, this game is freaking frantic, and it's incredibly fun. This is one of the better twin-stick shooters I've ever played. I say that because it's, the whole zombie thing is actually perfect for the genre. You don't actually see it a lot too, either. You know, usually a twin stick shooter is either, you know, you're a ship and there's other ships around, or you have like an exploration element to it. You know, there's lots and lots of ways to do twin stick shooter, but just sticking you on a screen and throwing endless waves of zombies at you is my favorite way of presenting like this style of playing. And it reminds me a lot, actually, of a game I really liked on the 3DS called Witch and Hero. which those were like these $2 games, the $2 or $3 games that came out, but they were super fun. So I was really enjoying that. Really enjoying unlocking the characters. And of course, along with the characters, you can unlock new, really badass looking weapons that all seem to cost 10,000 gold. So I haven't, well, it's the 9999 gold thing, but that might as well be 10,000.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to seeing what those are, because, I'm really, really quite liking getting into this game, and getting the new character actually didn't make the old character bad. It just, they're different characters for different styles of playing. So I really appreciate that too. There's a lot to appreciate in this game. And honestly, I wasn't expecting it to be as good as it was, just based on like the title, which, you know, Riddled Corpses. I'm like, you know, it's not really my thing.
Proved you wrong.
It did. And, you know, but I'm a House of the Dead fan. So, you know, blasting zombies all day and just a mindless sort of like, you know, just like it says, riddled corpses. It's just like, you know, endless barrages of bullets and undead enemies blowing up. And that's just excellent fun.
Cool. So overall, $10 on this one. What do you think of it?
They could have asked for more, but yeah.
Don't tell them that.
No, I won't. But no, $10 is perfect for that. Definitely get this game. And in all this, I forgot to mention there is a two-player mode. And if we had recorded this tomorrow, I could tell you how that is, because I have a friend coming over to play video games. But as it stands, I think it just throws a second character onto the screen, which to me, you know, like literally anything they could do with throwing a second character in there would be an immense bonus for me. Yeah. So it's not really a feature I can review because I played it by myself, but it's something that I am very, very excited about. So, and as a one player experience, it absolutely stands on its own as a $10 game. So go buy it.
Awesome.
Give it a chance.
You know, I own it on Xbox and I think I'm going to fire it up later tonight.
Yeah, do it.
And get some more time into it, because I really enjoy it.
I'm going to play it right after this.
Awesome. Well, speaking of, that is the end of this episode. Chris, thanks so much for coming on and taking care of your reviews. Thanks to Purnell as well for coming on and doing his. That's it for this episode. So, Chris, do you have any final words to end it?
I don't know. Keep making those CRT modes toggleable.
Yes.
Yeah.